God's Word is filled with paradoxes. The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for July provides lenses to evaluate and bring clarity to these paradoxes. It's titled, Faith That Sees Through the Culture. Browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040. The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month, Faith That Sees Through the Culture, 1-800-325-3040.
I just have one question.
When Cap needed help,
if I'd asked you, would you have come?
I guess we'll never know. But if you had, you'd have never been caught.
I do some dumb things, and the people I love the most, they pay the price.
Thanks to you, we had to run. We're still running.
Let's go.
That's a trailer to the movie, the new Avengers movie, Ant-Man and the Wasp. Interesting title. Pastor Ted Gee says it's actually a little bit of misdirection. How does it fit within the bigger saga that's being told, especially that big blockbuster earlier in the summer, Avengers Infinity War? Does it play into that storyline at all? Joining us to review the movie Ant-Man and the Wasp, Pastor Ted Geese. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and he taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, a Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd.
Ant-Man had his own film that is obviously a prequel to this one, but Ant-Man also appeared in the ongoing saga of some Marvel films, had key roles to play there, not as Ant-Man little, but as Ant-Man really, really big. Mm-hmm. But I think many noticed that he was nowhere to be seen, am I right, in
right.
the big culmination Infinity War. Review what that movie was for us real briefly, and if you can, tell us, what's the relationship between Ant-Man and the Wasp and Infinity War?
Okay, so blanket spoiler alert on, you know, Infinity War and also on this film. So here you go, guys. So essentially, Infinity Wars involved this character Thanos, who was a villain who'd been plotting this kind of Malthusian plot to remove half of all the people out of the universe in order to, you know, reduce suffering, you know, hunger, things like that. Of course, he does this by getting this gauntlet full of these Infinity Stones that give infinite power. He, of course, doesn't think to just double the size of the universe, double the size of the resources so that everybody could eat. He doesn't think of that. He's a murderer. So the Avengers and other Marvel heroes are fighting against Thanos, and that's what goes on in the Infinity War film. The conclusion of that film is that Thanos does snap his fingers and half of everybody turns to dust and is gone. And a lot of people who saw the movie felt that was very, that hit them right in the feels. It was very tough. So this movie, Ant-Man and the Wasp, is, they don't say exactly when it's happening, but by the end of the film, you realize what it precedes the events of the Infinity War film. So that whole like people turning to dust thing does occur in this Ant-Man film. So it becomes part of the film. So that's how they kind of interleave together. So they were on their own kind of adventure, as it were, that was kind of coinciding with things that were going on. They just happened to be in San Francisco dealing with their own stuff. Meanwhile, all of the Avengers stuff is also going on. So that's kind of how that unfolds. You won't see how that dovetails unless you stay through the credits, because the way that it dovetails together happens at the midpoint credit scene in Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Okay, so every superhero has, I tend to think of it as kind of their power, that place where the audience is asked to severely suspend disbelief so that the movie can proceed. Just for the sake of those who are not familiar with Ant-Man or the Wasp, what is that point of disbelief suspension? What's the place where the audience is asked to say, oh, this guy can do that on a regular basis.
If there are any physicists that happen to be listening to the show, just send me a message, because I'm really curious as to whether or not, if you're a physicist and you're watching this film, if it's easier or if it's harder for you to suspend disbelief, because that's the area that you have to, you know, suspend your disbelief in, is the area of physics. Because the idea is that the suit that Ant-Man wears, and actually this technology that this character Hank Pym, played by Michael Douglas, has developed, is this, it can shrink things down and it can expand things. So we're talking density, size, kind of a thing. So you take like a 180 pound guy, muscly or whatever, 200 pound guy or whatever, and then you make him like the size of an ant. Well, he still weighs the same amount, but he's tiny. So he can like grab somebody, flip them, and you can do things like that. But it just doesn't work, because you would, like, if you were that weight and that small, you would probably sink into a grass front lawn, right? You wouldn't be able to run around. So there are things where you just have to kind of like let that go. But yeah, this is the whole thing. The suits that the Ant-Man and the Wasp, so Paul Rudd and Evangeline Lilly playing these characters, they can shrink really small. And in the case of Ant-Man, he can also like get very large. But when he gets very large, everything takes more energy and he tires out faster. So you can get really big and you can do something, but you're going to like exhaust yourself to the point of like collapse. So this is, and then there's danger in getting too big, and there's also danger in getting too small. So if you go subatomic, there's a fear that you can't come back. You'll go so small that there's no way to get back. And that's actually what got set up in the first film, because what you have is the Ant-Man and the Wasp. There's a modern pairing, and then there's an older pairing. So Michael Douglas and Michelle Pfeiffer are the older pairing. They play the Ant-Man and the Wasp previously, and then Paul Rudd and Evangeline Lilly are the new ones. So there's this kind of also family dynamic, and we'll talk about that, I'm sure. But the character that Michelle Pfeiffer plays, this Janet Van Deen, she goes so subatomic, and they set that up in the first film, that they lost her. And they thought that there's no way to come back. But at the conclusion of the first film, Paul Rudd's character, Scott Lang, goes all the way subatomic and then comes back, which opens the door to the possibility that they could rescue Janet Van Deen, who is the wife of Hank Pym and the mother of the modern Wasp, played by Evangeline Lilly.
We are reviewing the movie Ant-Man and the Wasp. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. When we come back, we'll talk about the movie's storyline.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
You could win an audio DVD of every presentation from all 6 Issues Etc. Making the Case conferences. Record your answer to the question, Issues Etc. What does this mean, on our comment line, 618-223-8382. If we play your answer during Issues Etc., we'll send you a conference audio DVD of almost 50 hours of teaching. 618-223-8382, and answer the question, Issues Etc., what does this mean? Please be sure to mention where you listen.
Your lifeline to the Lutheran worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The church's music from the 2nd century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The 6th century. The 12th century.
O come, O come, Emmanuel.
The 16th century.
Lord, hear us,
the 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Thursday afternoon, we are reviewing the movie Ant-Man and the Wasp. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. So, Ted, now that we know its basic relationship to the bigger story that's being told in the franchise, how does the storyline of the Ant-Man and the Wasp go?
Well, this is what you find is that the character of Ant-Man, of course, got embroiled in the fight between Captain America and Tony Stark's Iron Man in the Captain America Civil War film, which broke the Sokovia Accord, which was this thing that was put in place after the events of the Avengers Age of Ultron movie. So we're picking up on meta-narrative threads to, you know, almost soap opera-y kind of stuff. But because of his involvement in that, he ended up breaking those international laws and put under house arrest. So he's been under house arrest for 2 years, and he's a couple days away from the end of his house arrest. But he gets kind of sucked into this plot to try to get back Hank Pym's wife out of the subatomic realm. And has to kind of, a conceit in the film is that it has to happen at a certain time, or like in a window of time. And if it doesn't get done in that window of time, then it'll be 100 years or something before they can try again. So he helps them out. And but of course, everything gets all mixed up because there are people that want to get a hold of that technology. And, you know, so there's an old guy that Hank Pym used to work with from S.H.I.E.L.D. There's this black tech arms dealer kind of guy who wants to get a hold of the stuff. There's this mysterious ghost villain that kind of phases in and out, vanishing and reappearing, that also wants to get a hold of that stuff, and who has got a bit of a grudge. So they're all like, there's a bunch of people all trying to get a hold of this stuff, and they all kind of screw up each other's plans along the way. But that stuff's not really the super important part. The more important part in the film is family relationships that are in the film.
You say that the title itself is a bit of misdirection.
Yeah, it's great because there's also, you know, he's been in house arrest for 2 years, Scott Lang. So he can't go anywhere with his daughter. So when his daughter Cassie comes to visit, he has to entertain her in the house. So you see a little bit of that. And he's like learning magic tricks and stuff. So there in the film itself, there's this kind of thing where they talk about misdirection and like the way the magic is done, and also like with cards and things like that. So, and that actually becomes a plot point along the film, which is kind of fun too. But then the title of the movie itself is this kind of misdirection, because from the trailers and everything, it suggests, and what you'd think because of the way things got built up in the last film, you think that the movie is going to be about Scott Lang and Hope Van Dyne as Ant-Man and the Wasp, these modern characters utilizing this technology with their suits. But it's really actually more so a story about the previous Ant-Man and the Wasp, Hank Pym and Janet Van Dyne, played by Michael Douglas and Michelle Pfeiffer, because they have been separated through this, her in the subatomic world and him in the world that we are all familiar with. And they were a married couple. Like, and they are a married couple, and they still are, and they want to be reunited. So, you know, the movie then is about them being reunited as much as it's about anything else.
A very positive view of marriage here?
I think so. Like, it's something that stood out to me, is that the character of Hank Pym, and, you know, as far as I could tell, like, he never remarried. He didn't accept the fact, like, if somebody's missing for a certain amount of time, the government will just deem them to be deceased, right? So, you know, he never, you know, believed that. He worked to try to find a way to bring her back. And, you know, he never gave up on that. So he was very faithful, and there's no indication that he had any kind of extramarital sexual relationships along the way. So when you think of the, you know, the Sixth Commandment and Luther's Small Catechism, you know, he's living a sexually pure and decent life, you know, even though he's separated from his wife. And she's in the subatomic realm and there's just nobody there. So it's, you know, probably even easier for her in that regard. There's no potential suitors there. But the two of them are still a married couple, even in the midst of this very challenging situation where they're separated subatomically. And then, of course, during the course of the film, when they finally get to see each other again, there's not bitterness, there's not resentfulness over things. They are, in fact, happy to see each other, and there's a lot of love there. And I think that's a pretty positive portrayal of marriage in a difficult situation.
Now, we usually go in expecting action, and these films, generally speaking, provide tons and tons of action. I've seen the trailers for these. And then, of course, there's cross-promotion with all kinds of products out there. If I'm not mistaken, Intel may have a stake in this, some commercials that feature Ant-Man and the Wasp. But how do you pull off big action when you're super small? How does it come across in this film? I was kind of gratified to see that they didn't try in the film where Ant-Man was revealed to also be able to grow into a giant, whatever one of those Avengers films it was. I was gratified to see they didn't try to convince me that Ant-Man could pull off all this fighting with normally sized people while in his ant-like state.
Right.
But how do you pull off the action when you're small?
Well, I think the thing is that, like, sometimes people complain that these Marvel films, they just keep upping the ante. It gets bigger and bigger and more inflated, like the kind of thing that has to happen. And these Ant-Man movies are actually kind of smaller scale. And because they can, like, zip down tiny, they can take locations and turn them into epic battle sequences. So there is, like, in the trailer, even you'll see, like, this kind of stuff that happens in a kitchen. Well, you know, you could have a quick fight in the kitchen or whatever, I guess. But the way that they do this, because they go so small, it's like the carving knife, you know, coming down, and, like, it becomes quite epic in scale, actually, interestingly enough. So I think that they kind of do some of that stuff. They also do this other thing where they can, like, shrink and expand objects. So they have, like, an entire office building that they can shrink down to the size of a carry-on, a bit of luggage, which is, you know, interesting. But they also have these things they can toss at stuff. So they have, like, a Pez dispenser that turns into a gigantic Pez dispenser, or like a bottle of salt or whatever, or a little like a salt shaker that they can make huge. So they kind of mix it up. So, you know, unfortunately, like, it's best if you haven't seen a lot of the trailers, because I think they give away a lot in the trailers for that kind of stuff. But that's what they do. They take small objects, make them large. In the first film, it was the Thomas the Train thing, which was very entertaining in that first film. But they play with the juxtaposition of micro and macro kind of stuff. And then also, when you zip tiny like that, then you kind of are pretty much off the radar. Like, there's a little bit of kind of almost covert spy kind of stuff. Like, they can get around where people aren't seeing them kind of thing. But again, you have to kind of throw the laws of physics out the window.
We're talking with Pastor Ted Geese, reviewing the movie Ant-Man and the Wasp on this Thursday afternoon. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He is pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. When we come back, Ant-Man, the actor, is Paul Rudd. He's obviously known for his comic talents. How does that weave into this film?
And we're gonna have a ball just like we always do. Saturday night at the movies. Who cares what picture you see?
It can be tough to be Lutheran in America these days. Everything we hold dear seems to be under fire. Our families, our schools and churches, even our most deeply held beliefs. We need clarity amid the chaos, unchanging truth in a world of lies. The Lutheran Witness can help. Get the best of Lutheran reflection on faith and life, theology and culture. Learn more at cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatics series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. lutheracademy.com, and like them on Facebook. facebook.com/lutheracademy.
Issues Etc. returned to the air on June 30th after being canceled by the previous leadership of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod during Holy Week of 2008. For a special 10-year anniversary donation of $100 or more, we'll send you a CD of Issues Etc. listeners' top 12 hymns. You can make an anniversary gift online at issuesetc.org or by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234.
Hi, this is Pastor Eric Lang of Redeemer Lutheran Church in Gresham, Oregon. One thing I've asked of the Lord, to gaze upon the beauty of the Lord and to inquire in His temple. Mount Hood, Multnomah Falls, the Oregon coast. Oregon is beautiful. But nothing compares to the beauty of the Lord's house. If you are vacationing in the Portland area, please come join us at Redeemer Lutheran Church in Gresham, where the liturgy lives and God's people worship as one. For more information, go to wheretheliturgylives.org.
Education and edification. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Redeemer Lutheran, Mandeville, Louisiana. Our Savior Lutheran, Whitefish Bay, Wisconsin. Christ Lutheran, Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Emmanuel Lutheran, Louisville, Nebraska. Grace Lutheran, Warminster, Pennsylvania. Trinity Lutheran, Valonia, Indiana. Emmanuel Lutheran, Pensacola, Florida, St. Athanasius Lutheran, Vienna, Virginia, and Emmaus Lutheran, St. Louis, Missouri. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. IssuesETC.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're reviewing the movie Ant-Man and the Wasp. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. Here's some feedback from a reader of the Lutheran Witness magazine. William writes this: "Thank you so much for the Men at Church issue. I found its articles thought-provoking and encouraging. Keep up the fine work of lifting up ways that men can mature in their faith and in the process impact the lives of others with the love of Christ. The Lutheran Witness interprets the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective. You can learn more about receiving a print or digital issue at cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness magazine, cph.org/witness. Ted, I'm curious about how Paul Rudd was used in the role of a superhero. I remember the first one having some of his kind of comic talents put to work there, and I think they do the same thing with the characters of in the other Avengers movies. They get a little humor in there. It's not all extremely grim. But Paul Rudd is known primarily as a comic actor. How does the Ant-Man movie deal with that?
It's kind of self-effacing kind of stuff, mostly. Like he's like talking with Evangeline Lilly's character of Hope, and they're talking like they hadn't really talked about the events of the Captain America Civil War very much. Like, their relationship went on the rocks, and you know, he's kind of talking about going and fighting with Captain America and stuff, and he refers to him as Cap. Like, and then she says, "Oh, Cap, you know," you know, like you have like a pet name, kind of like this kind of stuff. And then he gets embarrassed, and it is a funny little moment. So a lot of it's kind of like he's a goofball who accidentally became a superhero. So he doesn't have like the stoic kind of superhero thing going on. In fact, they kind of play with a little bit of humor also now in the Thor movies. They kind of take advantage of the fact that, you know, like Thor doesn't always know how funny he is. And in this one, you know, like Paul Rudd's character, Scott Lang, is funny, but kind of knows that he's funny. So there is some, like, he throws in one-liners and stuff into things. So it's pretty good. Maybe it doesn't land quite as good as the comedy in the first film. There's a different series of writers on this, although Paul Rudd also has writing credits. So I think that probably he's involved in some of the humor that's in the film.
So back to where we began. Again, we'll warn our listeners against any spoilers here. You said that the way that Infinity War ended, with half the population of the universe turning to dust, does find its way into this film. How does it do that, and how does it, if at all, set up the possibility that the people who remain now are going to somehow set things to right?
Okay, so do you want the full explanation, or can I kind of couch it a little bit, just in case people have already listened this far?
Your call.
Okay, so essentially what happens is there's a scenario at the end where you've got, they have this subatomic tunnel. They can go into the subatomic world a little more easy and get out a little more easy with some people operating some equipment. So you have your four central characters, and they're all there. One of them has gone down into the subatomic world to collect something that they need, and they're in radio contact with each other. And when it's ready, time to go back, right at the moment that they're going to go back, the three that are left up in the rest of the world with all of the equipment, they turn to dust. So that's what happens. So you have three of the main characters from the film are gone. One of the characters, who presumably will show up in the second Avengers film, Infinity War film, is stuck down in this subatomic world. And there's no apparent way, you know, they're stuck down there currently. So that's kind of like the way that ends. So you've got somebody who maybe got tucked away so small that they didn't get snapped. When the fingers snapped, they didn't get snapped away. So there's somebody kind of like an ace up the sleeve, as it were, for the remaining Avengers for the next Infinity War film.
And what do you learn in the now all-important credit clips from this film?
Well, that's in the credit clip. That's the mid credit clip, and then the last one is just a throwaway clip. Like, you wouldn't have to really wait to the end. The burger and the hamburger is right there in that mid credit scene.
So are you more hopeful or less hopeful as a Avengers fan that what was the way that Infinity War ended can be undone?
Yeah. No, they're going to undo it. I just think that some of the characters are going to die. Like, they're going to have some actually be sacrificed, I think, to resolve the situation. But a bunch of them are going to come back. I'm positive that that's what they're going to do. It's just the case of how are they going to do it? And will it be satisfying, right? Kind of a thing.
Do you have any pastoral concerns about the film, either its message or what, you know, its action sequences or anything like that?
Yeah, the action stuff is all is good fun. Like, it's essentially if a family went and saw the first Ant-Man film and now it's been a couple of years, everybody should be fine with all of the action. There shouldn't be anything in there that would be frightening. If you can handle the first one, you can handle this one. I had mentioned the Sixth Commandment and how there's a very positive portrayal of that in the film. Also, the Fourth Commandment, like honor your mother and father. There's a big thing going on with the both the character of Hope, because there's like flashbacks to her being a kid with her parents, who are Ant-Man and the Wasp back then. And then also with Scott Lang's character's daughter, Cassie, and her relationship with her father. Like, there's very positive portrayals of kids and their parents. Like, and a very loving, good, like, situation where the kids honor and cherish their parents and are willing to help their parents. You know, sometimes with encouragement, sometimes now as an adult, this Hope character, you know, willing to do certain things, to risk certain things in order to save her mother. So that's very positive. There's one kind of disappointing thing, though, is that they do run afoul of the Second Commandment. So there are two instances where they take Jesus's name in vain, which really is not necessary, actually, for the film. Not that it's necessary ever, but it's just doesn't have to be there at all. And then also there's like quite a few times where it's like the OMG kind of thing that kind of pops up over and over and over again. It's more than is necessary. It's got to be over 10 times at least. And there's some other crass language. So that's, which isn't really a second commandment thing, but maybe a fourth commandment thing. But at any rate, that would be something where, you know, that is a disappointing thing for me. So on the one hand, they do really good with, you know, marriage. They do really good with parents and children. So family kind of dynamic stuff. But it is unfortunate and kind of disappointing that they mess up on that regard.
You can read Pastor Ted Geese's review of Ant-Man and the Wasp at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Ted has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and he taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, thanks.
Thank you.
When we come back, we're going to be talking with Helen Raleigh, senior contributor to The Federalist. She's written recently about the downside financially of cohabitation. Stay tuned. God's Word is filled with paradoxes. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July provides lenses to evaluate and bring clarity to these paradoxes. It's titled, Faith That Sees Through the Culture. Browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Faith That Sees Through the Culture, 1-800-325-3040.
Thanks to generous supporters, tuition for all incoming residential pastoral ministry and deaconess students at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, will be paid in full. Hi, this is Dr. Lawrence Rast, president of Concordia Theological Seminary. Learn more about studying for the vocations of pastor or deaconess in the 2018-19 academic year at ctsfw.edu.
Daily exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We Lutherans were never aided by following along with some other tradition's theological priorities and catchphrases.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Heath Curtis, Coordinator for Stewardship for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod on a Lutheran approach to stewardship.
Other folks are not approaching it from our good, solid Lutheran understanding of law and gospel and vocation. There's a place to talk about this in Christianity, and we have a way of talking about stewardship as Lutherans without ever using the word stewardship, if you like. I'm going to talk to you today about your vocation in your home, in your church, in your society, and how each one of these makes a claim on you, on your presence, on your support, on your prayers. That's how we should talk about this as Lutherans.
You'll find several stewardship resources at lcms.org/stewardship. lcms.org/stewardship.
When pastors talk about us, they call us ad crucem. When laity mention us, they speak of ad crucem. When non-Lutherans address us, they say ADC Rucam. But no matter how you say it, Ad Crucem is the place to go for greeting cards, artwork, jewelry, ornaments, housewares, church certificates, church banners, and all your gift-buying needs. Visit adcrucem.com, confessing the faith through art and word. ADC, RUCEM.com.